The Skype muted me for some reason.
Skype can't mute you. Only you can mute you.
I didn't do it.
Skype is pretty terrible.
I didn't do it. I didn't do it. Okay, anyways. The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 556, recorded on December 3rd, 2019.
Welcome to the 556th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 389th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Dinzer.
I'm Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry, and I am horribly sick and happy that I made it through that.
Oh, I thought you were laughing, actually. I thought you were about to giggle.
No, I'm stifling a cough really hard.
Oh, well, there's a mute button for you, too, if you need to. Actually, in the radio thing, it's called a cough button. It mutes you. You hold it down, you mute it so you can cough, and then you unmute yourself. One of the best things about having a new computer is I'm able to do some serious PC gaming. Thanks to Xbox Game Pass and other stuff, I'm able to do it really well. Although it's mostly older stuff that I'm playing, like State of Decay 2. I'm playing a crap ton of that. I am playing a lot of State of Decay 2. I didn't realize how, when the bugs were gone, how addictive it was. Right now, you know, I've gotten into the gameplay mode in which, oh, okay, so now I don't have to do a lot of that FedEx crap. Because when you get certain things, if you have certain leaders, you can actually have, you know, say, oh, I need gasoline. Well, I'll just call the trader, come and I can buy it from them. Instead of having to ask, is there any gasoline around, having to drive the car all the way there and drive all the way back. So now I don't have to worry about resources as much. I mean, you still have to get income in the form of influence. But you do that whenever every time you complete a mission. So, you know, so the tedious part is over, and now it's like, well, you know, this is nice, but I'd really like to control that water purification plant so that I can have fresh running water in my colony. You know, so that sort of stuff is going on. Then I also downloaded Middle-Earth Shadow of War, and here's the funny thing is, you know, on the graphics settings I'm using, it's doing some ultra graphics, and it's buttery smooth, even though my computer isn't that, it's powerful, but not, you know, super powerful. But one of the things I realized, using my Xbox 360 controller, wired controller with my new PC, you know, I'm getting some use out of it, is that I no longer have that delay when I'm doing counters and stuff, and I'm fighting a lot better. Because when I'm playing on the Xbox One, I know there must be some sort of delay. You know, there's some controller delay there. I'm wondering, maybe I should get a wired Xbox One controller. But I don't even know if that's the problem. I just think it's optimized better on PC. I don't know. And some other stuff. One of the disappointing things is that Phoenix Point came out today. But it's only on the Epic Store right now. It's supposed to be day one Xbox Game Pass, but they haven't released it yet. They said it's all in Microsoft's fault on this because they're gearing up with the release of Halo Reach, which we'll get to. So, what have you been playing, Scott?
I've been playing more of Grandia 2, getting farther in that game. Because Jedi Fallen Order is still not working for me, and there's lots of people that are still just not even able to play the game.
Yeah, hey, TJ, when you're not speaking, maybe you should put yourself on mute, because we can all hear you breathing.
Sorry about that. I'm fully back.
When you have something to say, just unmute yourself. So anyways, so Grandia 2, yeah. So you, how far are you into it?
I've crossed this canyon. I've beaten one of the...
have you played Grandia 2 before?
No, I played Grandia 1, though.
Okay, because I was wondering if you'd know where you were in the game, but apparently you don't.
I looked at some of the achievements, and there's basically these body parts of this, I guess, evil god demon that you have to defeat. And I've defeated one of them, and I think I've found the next one, which is his eye, I think. And basically, each of these body parts creates a disaster or a crisis in a village, and the first one was his tongue, which the game made it look like more like it was his mouth and not his tongue, but basically this one guy became very gluttonous and would eat everything, and everybody else was like starving and not able to enjoy food or life. And then in the next town, people's eyesight seems to be very strange, or you know, they fall asleep. That's what it was. They're falling asleep and they can't wake up. And there's this strange girl in a grassy field with flowers. And so it's that's you know suspicious, and we'll I'll have to find out what's going on there.
TJ, but I think it. Have you played Grandia, TJ?
I have not played any of the Grandia games.
Okay, I was just wondering. Because then you can tell Scott where along in the plot he is.
I think it's still early in the game. And it's interesting because the first Grandia, you played this like starry-eyed adventure wannabe kid that just was couldn't help but be like enthusiastic about going out and adventuring. And now your main character is this jaded mercenary who's just like, ah, the world sucks.
But it does suck, so there. How about
I guess
you?
So.
How about you, TJ? What have you been playing?
I've actually been playing on a game for review. It's actually the embargo is up for tomorrow, so, which is this will be out by then. So, sorry. Had a brain fart. Darksiders Genesis is what I was going to say.
Oh yeah, that which is a completely different genre than the Darksiders.
Yeah, they took it from like the sort of God of War hack and slash puzzle solver type thing into
made it Diablo. Woo!
Yeah. It pretty much is Diablo-esque, but I would almost even say like it plays more like Marvel Ultimate Alliance, which I really dig. I don't know. You can switch back and forth between Strife and War as you please in single player, but in multiplayer, you can have them both on the screen. I kind of wish you could just have them both on the screen at the same time and just like do that whole Marvel Ultimate Alliance sort of vibe. And if they decide to throw in War and Fury, or I mean Death and Fury down the line, that would make for a 4-man squad, and that would be even more fun.
The thing that always bothers me is the naming of these things, you know, because War and Strife are the same damn thing. I mean, you can't have Pestilence, because all it means is people are getting sick around you.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Strife is just like hard times, whereas War is like full-on violence.
Yeah, they're still the same thing.
I would say Strife and Fury are a little bit closer. I don't know.
They're all the same thing. They have to because they can't do the classic Four Horsemen because they're boring. I mean, what are you going to do with famine? He makes people hungrier.
Mm-hmm. He hits people with a stick and they just get hungry.
Or maybe he just eats them, like in 52.
See, now you're getting creative. You've had two thoughts and they're already creative enough to form the basis of a horseman.
Yeah, well, it's not. I'm not really being that inventive because 52 had it, where Sobek was basically one of the Four Horsemen. He was famine. He was always complaining about being hungry, and then he ate one of the main characters. So anyway, yeah.
The game is good though. It's like I said. You in single player you switch between Strife and War. It's very you still solve puzzles, but it's very Marvel Ultimate Alliance. Like, it's not so much of like a grind and level up type thing so much as it is just kill everything that gets in your way, collect some souls, solve some puzzles, kill some bosses, keep moving, unlock some things, get abilities that allow you to go back to things that you couldn't unlock before. So it still maintains a little bit of that sort of like Darksiders quality where like you pick up abilities that allow you to unlock things you couldn't unlock when you pass by them the first time.
You should also mention it's really good looking.
It is really good looking. Like it's top down and you're pretty much in hell for most of it, but
yeah,
it's like
it's not top down, it's more like isometric.
Yeah. But you're pretty much in hell for the most of it, and it's got a lot of sprawling environments and just like really, really, they do some fun things with the camera work. There'll be times where you're like sitting on top of a cliff, and in the background you'll see like a castle under siege, and then eventually through the course of the level you make your way into that castle.
Yeah, there's more lava in this than a Mario Castle level.
Well, that's hell for you.
So, yeah. So, anything else, or just stuff you were reviewing?
No, just Darksiders Genesis for now.
Okay. Anyways, we mentioned Halo Reach, so we're going to hit right into game news. Halo, the Master Chief Collection, hits the top of the charts on Steam. This comes from PC Gamer. Halo finally made a big splash on PC today with the release of the Master Chief Collection on Steam, and if you're into that sort of thing, the Microsoft Store. And in case there was any doubt PC gamers want it, and want it bad, the collection is currently number one selling game on Steam, while the standalone Halo Reach holds down in third place. Which I like, because you could either get the collection for $40, or you can just get Reach for $10. And, you know, there's a lot of people who maybe don't care about 1 or 2 or ODST and stuff like that, and they just want, you know, Halo 5 or Halo Reach, you know. As VentureBeat points out, seeing the Master Chief Collection at the top of Steam charts is a little unexpected because, well, Halo hype notwithstanding, the games in it, Reach, Combat Evolved, Halo 3, ODST, and Halo 4, are hardly new. The first game in the series came out in 2001, and while the most recent, Halo 4, came out in 2012, that's not true. Well, I mean, in that set, yeah. Most of them haven't been on PC previously, though, and the ones that have been ran through the late, wholly unlamented Games for Windows Live. You know, here's the thing: I liked Games for Windows Live, making them effectively unplayable now. If for some reason you had to be stuck with the urge to play an 18-year-old shooter, although they're referring to the first Halo, but really you didn't have to worry about online with Halo 1. It was Halo 2 that was released on PC that dealt with the Vista Games for Windows Live thing. So it's actually 15 years old. The solid start would appear to validate Microsoft's strategy announced earlier this year to release more of its games on Steam rather than keeping them exclusive to the Microsoft Store. Exclusives can boost storefronts, witness the success of the 8-bit game store, but Microsoft's implementation of universal Windows apps complicates things for mods, overlays, and external tools. In fact, while official mod support for Halo Reach won't be implemented until next year, 343 Industries recently revealed a workaround that will enable players to horse around with mods right away. Yeah, like, not being officially supported was ever a barrier for people who wanted to make mods for a game. The Halo Master Chief Collection's player count is also skyrocketing. Six hours after the release, the concurrent player count went up to 148,000, good enough for third place in the top 100. So it's available now for Steam for $40, or Halo Reach by itself for $10, like I just said. It's also available at the Microsoft Store as part of the Xbox One Game Pass for PC, and that is the key part, by the way. Microsoft is already putting this on the Game Pass, so of course they're going to put it on Steam, because that's just extra money. You know, people are already paying for the subscription. I don't know how many people are actually going to buy it at the Microsoft Store, but those who buy it at the store will probably already have Game Pass, so they'll play it there. And Microsoft says, let's get some more money and sell it on Steam.
Yeah, I mean, like, how long have people been clamoring for, like, Halo is probably as requested as, like, the Red Dead series, you know? Like, Halo's been around longer, obviously, so of course people are have been asking for it for longer. But it's one of those things that, like, people have wanted this for a long time.
Yeah, well, basically for the multiplayer, but I will say Reach has the best single player of any of the games. All you have to do is just ask people, okay, how about that final level? You know, there'll be another time. And spoilers for those who haven't played it, that's the epilogue in which you have to face off against unending waves of Covenant until you're killed, and then you get another cutscene about Halsey talking about how you made the difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it always brings tears. And it was a very poignant moment. I always thought that the rookie in ODST was going to die. It always felt that way. So I guess they were just saving it for this guy, Noble Six.
the whole thing, like from beginning to end, is a really good story. I think it's probably the best of all the Halos.
Of course, everything is going to shit. I mean, almost the entire team dies. My favorite is when the captain decides, you know, how to sacrifice his life. He just takes the pelican and rams it into the face of a scarab. Mm-hmm. And the way he does it, he just says, you're on your own, Noble. Carter out. And then crazy black guy says, give him hell. Or something to that effect. He just crashes it into the scorpion, into the scorpion. It's like, so it's so well done, that scene.
Yeah. Like, I think it's always a bit of a challenge when you have games like these where you know how it ends. You obviously know that as a prequel, all of these people have to die in order for it to move on to the next part. It's like having a Star Wars Death Star movie. Like, you know bad things happen to everyone here, but so they still want to tell this story. And how do you make that matter? And I think the whole thing with, like, the helmet on the planet and the grass growing back after a certain time was just, like, that was, like, a gut-wrencher of a moment. You still there, Jonah?
Uh-oh. Jonah?
Ah, crud.
I don't know what's going on. Oh.
No, I'm here. I just had to mute something.
Oh, okay.
So hold on one second, okay?
Alright.
So that's good that Halo is doing well on Steam. I guess, you know, we shouldn't be surprised. I mean, people might... I guess there are people that haven't played it that were waiting for it to be on PC, and that's what they've done.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, there are games... Halo Reach was one of the ones I played, but I ended up skipping over Halo 2, 3, and 4. I played ODST, but I skipped the other three. And so, like, I have no idea what happens. It would probably be a good opportunity for someone like me to go back and check out that stuff and see how it turned out. Because even like through the years, even though that's like one of the most beloved franchises of all time, I really don't pay attention enough to like know the main beats.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's really cool for people to be able to, that like missed out on it when it was like Xbox exclusive to be able to actually jump in and see what all the fuss was about.
I'm sure there's plenty of Steam achievements for the game for people to increase their gamer score.
Oh yeah, I forgot all about that. There's gonna be all new achievements. Now, then you know another game that everybody been begging to play on PC was Red Dead Redemption 2, and that finally came out last month.
Yes, it was a buggy mess when it came out, but they're moving it along.
Yeah, I mean, there are some complaints with the Steam version of Halo Reach, but it's just you know, it's mostly positive stuff. There's just a few people having problems, you know. And I watched people playing, and you know, I couldn't tell any difference from the PC version. It'll be. I mean, I have Game Pass. I actually own the collection, but it's on disc. So it'll be interesting to see if I can see how it plays with a keyboard and mouse. I mean, I did before. It was still, you know. But like I said, you know, the story for Halo Reach is worth going through again. Especially when you briefly meet Buck over the skies of a city. And I know the Easter egg on how to get the all the Covenant disco dancing. There's a way to get them if you do certain things and you go in there and what's it called? All the Covenant are dancing to EDM. But in order for you to move the plot forward, though, you have to steal the generator. And what's funny is that if you kill one of them, or you steal the or you do the thing you're supposed to do, get the generator, there's a record scratch and all of them stop and stare at you before they attack. So yeah.
Didn't somebody say, like, wasn't there a thing, like, where they had one more Easter egg that they said, like,
There's a lot.
I feel like the first Halo was one where they said there was one Easter egg that still nobody had found.
There's the easiest Easter egg in Halo Reach, though, in which at the end when you're loading up, if you look to the right, it'll pan over and show Master Chief in hibernation.
Yeah, the series was just chock full of stuff like that, as far as I remember.
In Halo ODST, there was a logo for Destiny, so Bungie had been planning that thing for a long while.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, let's move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
Resident Evil 3 remake cover art leaks ahead of the official announcement from Eurogamer. Resident Evil 3 Remake cover art has leaked ahead of an official announcement from Capcom. The cover art, which Eurogamer sources have confirmed to be the real deal, was spotted on GameStat via Reset Era. GameStat tracks additions to the PlayStation Network, and on it can be seen cover art for Japanese and international versions of Resident Evil 3 Remake. Eurogamer sources previously told us that the Resident Evil 3 remake was real after it was mentioned by YouTuber Spawnwave, who said it was on track for a 2020 launch. Back to the cover art, and we see Resident Evil star Jill Valentine with a reworked look, as well as Carlos Oliveira, one of the surviving members of the Umbrella Biohazard Countermeasure Service, or UBCS, sporting a new hairdo. And of course we see Nemesis itself, the intimidating villain from the original. Given this leak, an official announcement is surely not far off. The Game Awards is on the 13th of December, and it sounds like a good chance for the shout. So I'm excited about this. I'm super duper excited about this. Resident Evil 3 was my favorite of them.
Really?
I like Resident Evil 2 a lot. The first one is a classic, and then like Resident Evil 4 is amazing. But I have a special place in my
heart. Nemesis?
Nemesis is a big part of it. He's an amazing monster.
Mr. X.
Well, Nemesis was the first time that we ever got a monster that could actually follow you through doors. And that was terrifying because like it was always like the safe space, you know, where you go through the door and you've gotten away, you're good. But you move down the hallway and suddenly he's there, and it's just like no, that's not okay, that's not how it works. And like it's weird to think that that was a limitation of the time, but like now it's like it's funny to think of like that's what made him even more scary. And I wonder how they're going to up the ante on that.
I wonder. You know, I'm willing to bet you that when Resident Evil 4 Remake is released, it's going to be an all-time bestseller. Because people are waiting to see that updated.
Yeah, I feel like Resident Evil 3 will be a good one, Resident Evil 4 will be a good one, and then they can just stop and pretend that the rest
doesn't
exist.
What if they fix Resident Evil? The problem with Resident Evil 5 is that... Well, I guess you could fix the AI, but the story was just offensive.
Well, and it's also not even like a horror game. It's an action game.
Well, Resident Evil 4, I keep saying Halo, Resident Evil 4 was an action game, too. I mean, all it had was a lot of zombies just trundling over to you to strangle you.
There was still a good vibe of horror to Resident Evil 4.
Yeah, a little person in the Napoleon outfit, that's scary.
The guy that comes through with a chainsaw that just eats bullets is...
You can shoot him in the head. Come on.
You could shoot him in the head, and he just keeps coming. You have to shoot him in the head a lot.
What was scary was Claire's outfit. Where did she get that outfit from? I'm going to wear a sweater vest and a skirt and some... You know, it's like...
Oh, the president's daughter.
Yeah. I mean... At least she, no, I'm sorry, not Claire. Well, what the hell was her name?
I forget. We'll just call her the president's daughter.
Oh, come on. She has to have a name. It was Ashley. That's right, Ashley. Yeah, she was wearing a kilt, damn it, and thigh-high boots.
Yeah, she was very trendy for a kidnap victim.
Actually, you know, at least she had the good sense to get out of the way when the shit hit the fan. Or she would duck, you know, or just, you know, the only time that she was in trouble is when one of those monks would just pick her up. and walk with her. And you had to be careful because a lot of games were ended because you accidentally shot her instead of the monk.
Yeah. That was one of the most annoying things, was any part where you had to escort her around.
Well, at least she had the good, like I said, she had the good sense to get out of danger, you know. Or hiding a thing, you know, while everything went. It was one brief moment in which she was playable, but, you know. Then she just took vases and threw them at the monks.
But yeah, the Resident Evil 3 is going to be ridiculously good because they explored a lot of the city in Resident Evil 3. Like, you go from the police... Like, Resident Evil 2 mostly takes place in the police station. Resident Evil 1 mostly takes place in the mansion. Resident Evil 3 goes between the police station, a hospital, the sewer system, a church with a clock tower. There's a lot of area that game covers, and it'll be really interesting to see all of it reimagined for this. Which is why I'm shocked that they're talking about a 2020 launch, because that seems really soon after Resident Evil 2 remake. And
I think it's more of just a porting to a new engine.
Well, and they're working on this other Resident Evil multiplayer thing with Project Resistance.
Yeah. I'm thinking, maybe they might cock tease people and not do Resident Evil 4 and instead do Resident Evil 0. Veronica.
They did Resident Evil 0 along with a remake of Resident Evil 1.
I don't know. I mean, just doing, you know, doing it to the extent of Resident Evil 2.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's probably be Resident Evil 4. They want money.
I could see them going all the way through Resident Evil 3, Resident Evil 4, and Resident Evil Code Veronica.
Maybe Code Veronica will come first before Resident Evil 4.
Well, it did in general anyways, so that makes sense.
I mean in terms of doing the remake.
Mm-hmm.
What was the big deal about Code Veronica anyway? Because I know people are saying that's one of the good ones.
It was the first time that Chris came back, the original character, since the first game. And you had Chris and Claire Redfield together in the same game. And also it was it had a lot of interesting locales as well, but it also had one of the most annoying characters in the entire series.
Okay.
Anyone who remembers Steve Burnside remembers that super nasally voice. I don't want you following me, lady. You only slow me down. It was, right on the cusp of where voice acting in Resident Evil games got less hokey and a little bit more I don't know. Resident Evil 4 was still pretty funny with that little Napoleon dude.
Yeah, I didn't realize that Michael Goh played Osmond Sadler in Resident Evil 4. For those who don't know, Michael Goh also played Alfred in the Tim Burton Batman movies.
Yeah.
So, anyways... we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Is Scott still with us?
Scott. I don't know. Maybe Scott fell asleep?
No, I'm here. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. Number 3.
Okay. Tron Evolution DRM revokes buyer's licenses, pirates unaffected. This is from Alt Char. People who bought Tron Evolution on Steam have been locked out of their purchases unless highly specific conditions are met. This mess is a courtesy of Securom and expired licenses, but pirates were unaffected almost entirely. Securom reputation is already horrible. Even before this incident, but those who purchased Tron Evolution on Steam might start hating it even more now. For those not aware of the particular DRM product's history, it is filled with controversies, mostly started by DRM ruining the player's experience one way or another. The Wikipedia article lists only a handful, including the asinine attempt by EA to pester purchasers of Mass Effect 3 to reactivate their software every 10 days. Securom's infamy persisted even after it largely stopped being used, and latest victims of the DRM are Tron Evolution purchasers. Tron Evolution was delisted from Steam in mid-2019. Apparently, it's a result of Sekiro's subscription ending. But that's not even the worst part. People who picked the game up along the way didn't even have it installed, lost access entirely. Apparently, it was available for download until October 2019 when Steam users started getting errors about their serial codes being deactivated, since Sekiro's FAQ stated players should contact Disney about revoked licenses. Some of them did. Disney responded by stating they're looking into the patching the hiccup and have no estimate on the fix. As a result, the legitimate buyers not being able to access what to pay for, some suggested usage of certain sites associated with flags that feature skull and crossbones. That is really unfortunate.
It reminds me of the time in which one publisher actually went to a told people to pick up a patch that was created by a pirate site.
Oh, I see. Well, that's really bad.
You know, video games is one of the few arenas in which all customers are looked on like they're potential criminals. It's like, you're buying this? Well, guess what? We think you're trouble.
that's not a good way to build a good trusting relationship with your audience.
It's like if you go into a department store and you have to. You pick up something, some clothes, and every 10 steps after you went to the cash register, they ask you, "Did you buy that?"
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're going to put a tracking device on you just in case. I mean, Tron Evolution isn't that great a game. I played it. It's like, eh. But, I mean, there are people who want to play it, and now they can't. You know, and there's a reason why Good Old Games exists right now. For those who don't know, Good Old Games, none of them have any DRM whatsoever. And I think it's CD Projekt Red who said, you know what, we're going to release the Witcher games, including Witcher 3, on Good Old Games without any DRM whatsoever, because we don't care. And they made a shit ton of money, and it's like other people said, oh, wait a minute, you know what? Rather than having to pay for a shitty copy protection, let's just release it on Good Old Games.
Yeah, okay, I think that worked well.
There was one that I know it's not Sekiro, but there was one like this a while back with supposed to be software protection that was supposed to be uncrackable.
And oh, then yeah, people, I remember that, yeah.
I don't know, stuff like this. People, it mostly, yes, it's important to, funnel people towards actually buying the game as opposed to, allowing for mass pirating. But I don't know. People are going to pirate a game if they really, really, really want to pirate a game.
I mean, it's a lot easier just to buy a game than it is to have to pirate it, to tell you the truth.
For sure.
You know, and Ubisoft learned that the hard way when it decided, you know what, we're going to use Always On for everything.
Denuvo is the company I was thinking of.
Oh, yeah. And Ubisoft tried Always On, and, you know, it was like, yeah, just wait until your servers go down, and guess what? Their servers went down, and no one could play their games.
That's it, yeah, and that actually came up with another game recently. Gearbox was saying that that Battleborn is going to be completely dead by early 2021, which I guess there's not that many people that care that much about Battleborn. But the thing that came up with it was that Battleborn has some single player content, and people asked, can we play the single player stuff at all? And they said no. Once it's done, it's done. Once the servers go down, you can't play anything on Battleborn in any way.
That's really bad.
Which explains why they're so hung up on games like... the third game of that series that I don't like came out.
Borderlands?
Borderlands 3, it makes most of its thing doing co-op, so it's almost always online.
It's still just a bummer, though, because there are a handful of people that want to play that game and just to even the single player content, you just shut it all down and there's no way to play it whatsoever. That kind of sucks.
Well, now you have to go to piracy in order to fix that. I wonder if Gearbox would think, you know what we could do? We could sell Battleborn as a single player game for $10. You know, I mean, free to the people who already bought the damn thing, but I just mean, you know, have a single player version of the game for $4 or $10 or whatever, and you know, at least get something out of it.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I mean, obviously they're still getting something out of it because they're not shutting it all down until, I'm sorry,
2021.
Yeah, it's not like they're rushing to shut it down. They're kind of they stopped sales of the game. They've pulled it off of storefronts, and they're still letting people buy the currency that you can buy in game until I think April 2020.
You know, that makes me respect Microsoft a lot more, because if you remember, they kept the old Xbox Live on until there was only one player playing Halo 2, and they said, well, that's not a multiplayer, so you're gone. But it's like people were playing, you know, a match for months and months and months, you know, a single match, and Microsoft just left it on just for them until finally there was only one person left to say, yeah, that's it. Now we're going to shut the door because you're not playing a multiplayer game. So at least, and Xbox Live is expensive. It has its own servers and stuff. You know? But yeah, I mean, this is where we're at right now. We don't own games anymore for the most part. No one owns a game anymore. Well, it's always been that way, technically, due to the EULA, because basically what you're saying, what it says, is that you're just renting this game. You purchased it, but you're only playing it until we say you can't play it anymore. And if there's any way we can get rid of it, there we go.
Yep, Nintendo loves that.
Which is shocking, because which makes Too Human all more shocking, because you're holding on to that disc. Well, guess what? They released the digital version of it for free on Xbox Live.
Yeah, but it's just kind of a sad state of affairs, like that. A, that you could just like make a game completely unplayable if you decide to, and B, that like people could be so fucked over by just like something like DRM and licensing rights.
Well, that's why you have to remember who these people are and avoid buying their games, which is why I haven't touched Borderlands 3. Because Gearbox has been a shit show for a long time now. Forget about the actor who played Claptrap, but let's talk about Aliens Colonial Marines when they try to blame everybody under the sun. Except it was their own fault. You know? They've done some crappy stuff. Not quite as crappy as the people who did Ark Survival Evolved, but still crappy stuff. I mean, I don't know of anybody who's going to trust Randy Pitchford as far as they can throw them.
Yeah. Especially when it comes to thumb drives full of interesting content.
Yeah.
Oh boy,
who was the creative director behind L.A. Noire. If anybody wants to see a truly loathsome human being, the creative director of L.A. Noire, and I'm trying to remember his name, but basically everything was it's my way or the highway. He worked people 90 hours a week, and said, "Well, I do it." Yeah, but you're not a coder, and no one would want to work. No one wanted to work for him. Absolutely nobody.
Well, didn't he have a huge falling out with
the sequel, Horror of the Orient? Oh, Brendan McNamara. He wanted to do a sequel, or not a sequel, but another game in the series called Horror of the Orient, and no one in Australia would work for him. Not a single person.
Yeah, make a reputation.
Yeah. It was just. There's a. I advise people to go to YouTube and see the what happened for L.A. Noire. And you wouldn't believe how gigantic this guy's balls are.
I was trying to remember if he was the one that had a huge falling out with Rockstar, but I feel like that was someone else.
No, I mean, here's the thing. Rockstar said, yeah, he had a huge falling out with everybody, though.
I feel like Rockstar had a huge falling out with somebody else that was like one of the main guys behind Grand Theft Auto. I couldn't remember if this was that guy or not.
Oh, no. Yeah, you're talking about the guy, it's something Jones. Not Alex Jones, something else. But he is the one who's behind APB. And he was also the one behind, what was the name of that? Hellgate London.
I feel like it was Leslie Benzies.
No. APB was done by, but yeah, APB was his baby, David Jones. He was the one who had the falling out. Oh, no, he had the falling out he had the falling out with Blizzard, if I remember. Because David Jones, I believe, was behind Diablo. No, he was the one behind. He was the one behind the original Grand Theft Auto.
Mm-hmm.
And he was also behind Crackdown.
Leslie Benzies also had a thing with a falling out with Rockstar. It was like he claimed they owed him $150 million in unpaid royalties.
Yeah. Well, he was also behind Syndicate Wars too, David Jones. And he was behind Lemmings. God, we have to do a gaming flashback about Lemmings. It was the original. It's a concept that's, you know, that's basically done in a lot of games now, but for those who don't know, Lemmings was the original a puzzle game in which you had to make the lemmings, you know, not die. They just moved forward they just walked forward, and you had to manipulate the environment to make sure they didn't die. And there was you had to give them special powers as well, like one had an umbrella, you know, and that sort of thing.
Kind of the Eternal Escort mission.
No, it wasn't an escort mission, because in an escort mission you're there with them. No, this was more of a puzzle game.
I definitely felt like I was there with them.
And the best part of Lemmings is if you thought you screwed up the level, you just press a button and all their heads explode.
Some of those levels were super long, though, and like if you effed up, you really felt it. Like you would just sit there staring, like, no, why? I hate you things.
Yeah, the last game I played that was that basic type of game was Bridge Constructor, in which you have to create bridges for cars to go through. Then they made the portal version of that, which used portals. But yeah, I mean, Lemmings was revolutionary. I mean, and they came out with one every day. I mean, I remember they had the Christmas version that came out like a few months later. Was there a Christmas? They had the Christmas. They had the sequels. They had the 3D Lemmings. I don't know if that was very popular. Yeah, 3D Lemmings wasn't very. And it came out for the Saturn. Yeah, I mean, Lemmings is one of those revolutionary games that no one talks about or thinks about anymore.
Yeah, it's a shame. That was a pretty unique game back in the day.
It was the big major hit for the Amiga. And then it just became multi-platform for everything. Everything. And what's weird is that the last port of it came out for some console I never heard of in 2005. You'd think they'd have a new port of it for like Xbox Live Arcade or something.
Or Switch.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a basic concept, and Psygnosis made a few of them. You could all bundle them in one game. You know, you could bundle Lemmings 1, 2, Christmas, and just they also had a paintball Lemmings, which was a shooter. Anyways, just, I don't know why they were called Lemmings either. They were just these green-haired things.
It's based off of the idea that the actual animal lemming will follow each other off of a cliff together.
Which is a lie, but thank you, Disney, for that. Anyway, getting back to to Tron Evolution. You know, there are certain DRMs we couldn't stomach. I mean, people really hated Steam for a long while, but now people have accepted it because Steam's DRM is pretty unintrusive, you know. And Microsoft's DRM is unobtrusive.
It's also possible to fiddle around with Steam's DRM. Like I remember when I first bought Fallout on Steam. This was before GOG, and I had no, and like it would not work regularly on my PC, and so I had to like go into the files and mess around with a lot of stuff to actually get Fallout working, and basically. But and so like I'm sure like Steam is cracked down a little bit, but like it still feels like there are workarounds for Steam DRM.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, why bother? I mean, it's fine. One of the bigger things about Steam, you know, the one thing about these stores as DRM is at least when you go to a new computer, guess what? You don't have to pull out the disk again and just pop it in and have to do the... Remember when you used to get a new computer and you had to go through all your disks and reinstall this and reinstall this and reinstall this and reinstall this? Oh, God, it was a pain. And, you know, the funny thing, good thing is that if you want to do cloud saving, well, great. Not only do you not have to reinstall everything, but you don't have to carry your save files around. They're already there. And fortunately, and the Steam said this 15 years ago, that if anything ever happened to Steam, which seems unlikely now, they would allow you to, you know, write everything to disk, so you can you could have a physical version, even though the digital version went away.
Which is awful nice of them. I wonder if they would actually stand by that now.
Well, I don't think they would go... Well, here's the thing. Now everything is digital, so it's, you know, other stores might pick up the slack. I mean, I remember when I got a game on, you know, and it was available on Steam, even though it didn't say it was a Steam game, and I could play it off the disk. It said, well, you can also get this on Steam. So you have that. So, there are certain things, you know, and Microsoft will... Now the Microsoft Store allows you to play your game off Steam. You know, in other words, you know, you have the game, you have a Steam game, right? Now the Microsoft game menu will show it, and it'll play it, and it'll open up Steam for you and let you play it. You know, so it's sort of like, you know, when you miss your flight or your flight is delayed, sometimes they put you on another air flight that isn't the airline you did, but they have sort of like an agreement, it's sort of something like that. So I'm pretty sure if Valve went down, there'll be places that'll honor, you know, the games that Valve has on it.
GOG might do that, or some of the publishers themselves, even.
Yeah.
You'd have to say, well, I'll prove you own it. Well, just go to my Steam page.
Yeah.
But you know what it is. You know what's funny is that it is surreal to be on the Halo Reach store page on Steam, and they have live streaming Halo Reach games. And I like that, actually, because it's sort of like saying, look how fun this game is, watch people playing it.
Yeah. By the way, this wasn't in our news, but Jonah, did you see that Mike Booth is coming back to video game development?
Okay.
Mike Booth is the creator of Left 4 Dead, and he's been at Facebook VR for the last 4 years. And he left Facebook VR today and is apparently getting started on... apparently, Mike Booth is apparently looking to get a team together and move back into game development.
You know, Turtle Rock is doing... Well, yeah, you wrote the story for Shaq News, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So for those you don't know, TJ is writing for Shaq News.
Yep.
And by the way, Shaq News is the news that Steam uses when it ever does... you know those little news items that are in Steam? Almost all the time, if you click on that, it'll take you to Shaq News article.
Well, that's nice. I didn't know that they were using my stuff.
Well, they're using Shaq News' stuff.
Which is now my stuff.
Yeah, but Turtle Rock is doing Back for Blood.
But he's not going back to Turtle Rock, as far as I know. He's looking to get...
Team. He already has a team.
See, that's what makes it interesting to me. I guess he's getting started on something new. Because he didn't – you have to remember when Turtle Rock reformed in 2000 – what was it, 8? He didn't join it. He didn't join back up with them.
Maybe it's because he knew Evolve would suck.
Who knows? But it looks like he's looking to start his own thing. And
Counter-Strike Global Offensive. I did not know that.
Mm-hmm. He's been a part of a lot of good things. He was also in he also worked on Yuri's Revenge, Command & Conquer Red Alert 2, Yuri's Revenge, and Command & Conquer Generals, which was the last good one. So yeah, like I'm interested. I'm interested to see what happens when that guy gets back into game development and starts to come up with ideas.
Maybe I should have used the Shaq News link, that news on Resident Evil 3 that you did on Shaq News instead. I mean, at least you could be doing it with your own voice. Then I could say, hey, guess what? Here's TJ's voice attached to it, saying his own article.
I try to be modest.
Well, I mean, and Nemesis updated look is out there to make Resident Evil 2's Mr. X look like Mr. Rogers. You know, you never mention gaming podcasts on your news editor thing. Your news editor description. See, that's a betrayal right there.
I don't mention a lot of stuff I've done.
You mentioned your Twitter handle, so there.
That's true.
You only say you like search for new food and drinks. You don't talk about yourself being a beer connoisseur.
I do. I do like the drink. That falls under drinks.
Yeah, no, I see, but that's not specific. See, here's the thing. You know, when you're a beer connoisseur, that just means, you know beer. You know, you know what types of beer, how to value them. It's not, I like food and drinks. That could be a Diet Coke for all we know.
I would hope that people understand that when I say food and drinks, I mean not McDonald's and not like Coca-Cola.
Hey, don't bash McDonald's. They actually have a new sandwich out there. It's not too different. It's just a chicken with bacon and onion rings. But you know, you can't go wrong with chicken, bacon, and onion rings and barbecue sauce, to tell you the truth. It's hard to fuck that up.
Yeah. Burger King finds a way to do it, but who cares?
Although, you know, here in New York, we have something called Lucky's Burgers. And I'm going to tell you right now, they have the best fries. When you do a fry, you know, Burger King ruins them. Four Guys is actually terrible at it. McDonald's does it extremely well. They have to be crunchy and potato-y, you know, and they are. I mean, not crunchy as in you overcook them and they're like – I mean – when you bite into one, it's like a firm outside, but inside is pure potato.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what Lucky's has.
Crispy on the outside, and when you bite into it, it just kind of melts in the middle.
Yeah. So Lucky's does that to perfection. But what makes it even better is they have a garlic aioli, what's it called, dipping? I don't use ketchup. I use that instead. Garlic aioli is so good with a fry.
Yes, it is. They have it They have a garlic aioli at Red Robin that I always get with their steak fries.
Oh, Red Robin's good.
We don't have those there. We have Lucky's Burgers. They also have a they have a combo, you know, and I always do their chicken. Because what I also do is I take it and I dip the chicken into the aioli as well. They also have their own Lucky sauce, which is sort of like how do I describe it? It is a creamy, spicy, mayo-y thing, but it's not mayo. I wouldn't say it's sriracha either. It's a spicy, mayo-y, but not mayo. You know, dipping sauce that they put on all their chicken burgers too. Yeah, when you go to New York, go to Lucky's Burgers. But you know what? Actually, I'm gonna say this right now. I found out that the few Lucky's Burgers that are in New York all are different, and the one that's the best is the one that's near me on West 23rd, because the one on West 55th, they do something different, and I don't like it. And the same thing with the one on Houston Street. I don't like the way they do theirs. I have to go to West 23rd, or else it's no deal. They also do if you ever get a burger combo, though, don't get the burger combo. Get the two twin burger combos. Because they may seem like they're smaller, but for some reason, those two burgers fill me up more than a single burger. It's like, instead of being 50% the size, they're like 65% of the size. So they're slightly bigger than half size, but at the same price. Why are we going into the fast food podcast now?
I don't know. I guess we ran out of video game topics.
Well, you know, I like, you know, I'm not a snob. You know, I can eat at the fanciest restaurant, and I can also go to McDonald's. I'm that one guy who sometimes goes to McDonald's and get a Caesar salad. They're not half bad, you know?
That's kind of weird.
That's good.
I go to CVS for a Caesar salad, too.
CVS has
food? CVS, wow. Yeah, they have Caesar salads. They have a lot of salads.
Wait, CVS, like the drugstore CVS?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have, yeah. They have the chicken Caesar salad is one I take. The reason why I do them, 7-Eleven has it too, but it's not quite as good. Although, since I get to I get to 2,000 points, you know, when I get to I get a free salad from them, so I do it there. But the salad at CVS, the salads, I don't try the other ones because I don't like Cobb salads and I don't like the other. I like Caesar salad.
Wait, you're burying the lead there. Did you just, were you saying that 7-Eleven has salad points?
No, they have reward points.
Okay. And when you I was just making sure I understood
you get
that.
A free sandwich or a free salad.
And I can't remember the last time I've been in a 7-Eleven.
You know, I go to 7-Eleven because, A, sometimes they have their brand chips, which I like. And also, they have the spicy hot dogs there, which are really good.
I've never been in a 7-Eleven that was in an area that I wanted to stay in for long.
I'm telling you, you know. And then they do that $5 for $5 on those I don't know what they're called. I forgot. But they have different versions, like they have the taquito, they have the, you know. And I usually get those, and I usually only eat half of them because they fill you up really quick.
I'll have to take your word for it.
But like I said, you know, I fill up my 7-Eleven's rewards fairly fast. Well, not lately. Lately I've been doing a lot of CVS. See, that's the difference. I don't shy away from convenience stores. I also go to bodegas. I mean, I do go to local bodegas. I don't just go to corporations, you know. You got to save the bodega. This went in a weird area.
Yeah.
And all because I went to look through Shaq News and because TJ Denzer mentioned he liked food and drinks.
I did see one news article related to gaming about Riot Games, I think.
Oh, yeah, that thing.
Oh, yeah, they ate shit.
They settled the lawsuit, right. I don't give a rat's ass. They're completely owned by Tencent. So.
I mean, that's still $10 million for them fucking up real hard.
Yeah.
$12 million. If you really think they learned their lesson, I doubt it.
No, I don't think they did either, but... I guess it's something better than nothing.
They're owned by China, literally.
I don't know. I think a $10 million mistake is enough to make you seriously second guess doing it again.
I'd hope so.
Well, like I said, you know, go to Shaq News. TJ's, you know, actually TJ, I would respect you even more if you wrote for Blues News.
Oh, I'm sorry I don't write for Blues News, then. I'm trying my best.
The reason why. Blues News, for those of you who don't know, is one of the oldest sites out there for game news. PC game news, by the way. They do have Consolation, in which they mention console news, but they've been around forever. And the guy who owned the site, I don't know if he's still alive. I know he had a brain tumor or something like that. He was really, really sick. I don't know if he survived, but the site is still around. And they will pick up all news. That's why when I was working for GamePen, I would send them links, and they would post the links of the reviews on their site. Blues News was the place to go. And you know what? I'm going to check. I don't even think they've changed their site graphics at all. Yeah. Their graphic, if you go to their website, bluesnews.com, they looked like that for the past 20 friggin' years. They have not changed one iota.
I think one of the funniest things someone pointed out to me today about the Resident Evil art is how Nemesis has a weird little button nose. Like, if you look at the one that's a close-up of his face, he just has a little sideways button nose there. And it's weird, because he doesn't have a nose in his original design.
I'm going to – one item I'm going to mention that I saw in Blues News that's from the first of this month, so it's, like, not on today's, because just so that I can – I want to hear TJ's reaction. Apparently, Star Citizen has passed the $250 million mark. Yes, $250 million.
That is a lot of money.
Ridiculous.
I did see that in my feed. It wasn't something I covered, but I did see that people are still throwing money at Star Citizen.
I'm going to buy Squadron 42. I mean, definitely.
Is that game released, or is it still in, like, beta
something? It's in another alpha. It's not even in beta. It's still in alpha. But I will say this. You know, people are having fun with it even in alpha. And like I said, it was split into two games, by the way. Now, Star Citizen and Squadron 42, and I definitely want to play Squadron 42. Because, you know, I would love to play a really updated Freelancer, and I know Elite Dangerous is out there. Don't at me.
Don't at you.
But Chris Roberts is the one who created Freelancer.
I wish more people would at me.
You know, it's starring Mark Hamill, and it's starring... Damn it, I forgot his name. One of the biggest, hammiest guys out there. Gary Oldman is in it. You know,
Star Citizen or Freelancer?
No, Squadron 42. Well, yeah, Star Citizen, but Squadron 42 is single-player Star Citizen.
Oh, okay.
And here's the thing, you know, I really hope that when this is finally done in the year 2030... Here's the thing, I think I mentioned on this podcast months ago. They have a YouTube playlist of all the commercials that Star Citizen has made all these fake commercials, often voiced by Lance Henriksen. And when I have them running, I just pretend I'm in a future society in which these advertisements for starships are like car commercials now. You know. And then I'm living in some far-off future where all this shit is possible. And I think that's the sense that you get when you're playing Star Citizen. You want to live in a living, breathing world. And, you know, Elite Dangerous does it too. Here's the thing. You know how big the universe is in Elite Dangerous? The developers estimate that people have found 0.006% of all the systems in that universe.
That's a lot.
It's like trillions and trillions of it, of places to explore that people haven't discovered yet.
I was going to say, the other one that seems like that, like successfully like that, is EVE Online.
Ugh, EVE Online is on its way out.
I don't know about that.
It's on its way out. This is recent. It's having its problems right now. So... And, you know, like, and here's the thing. Why play EVE Online when there's a bunch of pricks online? When you have Star Citizen... I mean Elite Dangerous. Oh, by the way, the other thing is that Elite Dangerous allows you to play in several ways. It allows you to play as if you're a solo game, there's no one else around. It allows you to play in a universe in which things that other players have done are represented in that world. Or you can play it as a straight-up multiplayer game in which there's other people doing stuff while you're doing stuff, you know. So it allows you to play the way you want to play, which is cool. And I don't think EVE Online is just too mercenary, to coin a phrase.
Hmm.
I mean, would you really want to have one of those things in which you got screwed over and you lose money in real life because whoever you're following fucked up badly?
I'm saying it's a unique experience, in which case that can happen.
Getting your hand chopped off. That's a unique experience. Would you want to experience that?
I know, but like I'm talking about a video game that's the video game version of chopping a hand off. And the fact that like it is still one of the weirdest and most interesting economies and societies of gaming there is.
The other problem with EVE Online is so friggin' dull. You have to be invested to a manic point to really want to be involved in that game. At least in Star Citizen. I keep saying Star Citizen, damn it. In Elite Dangerous, you can protect yourself, you know. Sort of like being in World of Warcraft and never flagging yourself for PvP.
Yeah.
But damn, you know, you gotta hand it to Chris Roberts. He found a need out there, and people said yes, please.
He invented an endless money pit.
Well, like, fortunately, things are moving along. There, according to the site, there are 2.4 million Star Citizens.
Wow,
that is a lot.
Let's see, what did getting that a goal that they were shooting for? Is that a stretch goal? Let me look down the list here for a stretch goal. No, the last stretch goal was $65 million. too bad. I want let's see, for $65 million, enhance ship modularity. So you have the ship of your dreams, but you really wish it could be customized to suit your needs. Okay. Like I said, you know, it's a game I'm interested in, but I'm not pre-ordering it, which is basically what funding it is, you know, crowdfunding it. I'm going to wait for the finished product, whatever that is.
Yeah, I guess, like you said, you'll be waiting until 2030.
Yeah. I mean, hell, you know, even just beta. You know, maybe I'll hop in beta. I mean, Scott, you jumped in on Minecraft, what, in beta mode, or was it in alpha?
It was in beta back in 2011.
When you hopped in.
And, there was, like, villagers were just being introduced, and you had the hunger bar introduced, and so it was... It's a neat experience to go through the variations of the game and realize what has been added since I first started, and it's
Oh shit! You know, I just realized we didn't discuss XO3. We didn't discuss Microsoft's. There was some shit in there which just shocked me. Boy, how are we gonna do this? What was the most shock? Oh yeah. Like what they showed at what was coming up for Game Pass, it was like holy fucking shit. They showed xCloud. What else did we discuss XO9 X19?
No, we didn't. It was at the London somewhere in London, and I can't remember. There was something I thought I liked, but I can't remember now.
Let's see. Oh yeah, they're releasing all of the Final Fantasy games on Xbox Game Pass. They're releasing all the released PC versions of the Yakuza games. The Witcher 3 is coming to Game Pass. You know, there was some stuff that really shocked me.
They had a really good new trailer for Wasteland 3 at XO19.
That's not going to be Game Pass, though.
Isn't Wasteland 3 going to be Game Pass? I feel like that was going to be a Game Pass.
No, I don't think so. Well, maybe. We'll see. I don't see it on the list. Let me put it that way.
Alrighty.
But, yeah, there was a lot of stuff that just shocked me that was going to be on Game Pass that everybody just went fucking wild for. Age of Empires 4 is going to be on Game Pass. Oh, yeah, Age of Wonders Planetfall. That's coming to PC Game Pass and console Game Pass. And I was all in immediately because I've been looking at Age of Wonders Planetfall, and now that it's coming to Game Pass on both console and PC, I'm going to be all in.
The interesting thing I saw was that Obsidian was making a survival genre with Grounded, where it's basically you've been shrunk down to the size of an ant, and now you're in survival mode trying to build so that way you can escape and get back to being normal size.
Yeah, Grounded. That's the name of the game.
I was calling that game Obsidian, I Shrunk the Kids.
Yes, that's appropriate.
It looks interesting. It's way, way different for Obsidian.
Well, yeah, it is very different and unexpected. So, you know, it's like I guess this is what they're doing with Microsoft money. And but it looks good and fun and, again, different.
You notice it
shrunk down to size of an ant, and now you have to survive till you escape. So it's like, don't starve, we've been shrunk.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is that all the companies that have been taken by Microsoft, sounds like Microsoft are saying, what is the weirdest game that you ever wanted to make, and we'll do it for you. Because Ninja Theory's next game is a friggin' Overwatch-type game with melee. Bleeding Edge. No one expected that from them. Now I can't wait to see what an Exile is going to do. Oh yeah, we want to make a game that's like Animal Crossing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I've always wanted to see, is game makers allowed to do the art that they want to, not because, oh, this game is hot now, we have to do this game. You know, make the game they want to make.
And you know that Bungie's looking at Microsoft saying, now you're doing this? Now you're doing this? They should have said, well, listen, you know what? Just split us up. Make 343 the people who still want to make Halo, and we'll do something else. Or maybe they always wanted to do Destiny, but Microsoft's saying, we don't like it. It's too similar to Halo. Here's the thing I wonder. Would Destiny have been the game they wanted to make if Microsoft had allowed them to build it? I don't know, because you have to consider at that time and place. I mean, I'm willing to bet you now, if Bungie was making Halo making Destiny for Microsoft, I think Microsoft would say, yeah, go wild. Just let us know when you're done. Because I think Phil Spencer has straightened up Microsoft and said, you know, you're losing. This is how you win. Get some talented developers and tell them, you know what? Go nuts. I'm very dubious about Bleeding Edge. I don't know if it's going to survive. But, you know, actually, Sea of Thieves has survived from Microsoft just keeping on propping it up, you know. So it'll be interesting to see what a free game on – because this just screams out Game Pass game, Bleeding Edge. If they just say, you know, and they make their money by selling the occasional map pack or whatever. I mean – they don't have... Here's the thing. And Tim Schafer said it best when he let Microsoft buy Double Fine? And Tim Schafer said, well, we need a lot of money. And they were giving us a lot of money. And we wanted to finish Psychonauts 2 the way we wanted to finish it. So I think that's the case here. You know, Microsoft is going to say, you know what, just do what you can. Just make us some weird stuff for the PC that we can put on Game Pass.
They're going to make Brutal Legend 2, which would be perfectly fine.
Brutal Legend as an action-adventure game and not as a stealth RTS. That was the thing that everybody hated about Brutal Legend. They thought they were getting an action-adventure 3D, you know, beat-em-up, and what they got was a real-time strategy game.
Yeah, the Battle of the Bands part was easily the most annoying part of the whole game.
Especially since the game didn't really tell you what to do. It sort of hinted what you could do, but there were no real instructions like, go to Mount Rockmore and do this. Where's Mount Rockmore? I have no idea. And it's a shame because I really like Jack Black's character.
I mean, the story of that game, like if you just sit and watch the cutscenes of the game, it's pretty dang good.
It's one of the best Jack Black movies that never happened.
Also, a really good Tim Curry performance.
But you wouldn't know that because very few people made it to the part where Tim Curry shows up.
No, he shows up about, I would say, 30 minutes in.
Yeah, my point exactly.
Ah, that's not fair.
I wanted to fight evil nuns, damn it. They showed evil nuns when you're in that car, which you might as well say every Tim Schafer car in a video game.
Having played... Wagon. Having played that game from beginning to end, I would say just go on YouTube and watch the cutscenes from beginning to end. And you'll get exactly as much fun as I had out of that game without any of the RTS.
You know, that makes me wonder. I wonder what Tim Schafer's next major game will be, because, you know, Broken Age wasn't a major game. It was an adventure game that they thought they would make it for $200,000. Psychonauts is a major game. But stuff like Headlander, you know, that's not a major game. I'm wondering what big AA or AAA game that Double Fine is going to make next for Microsoft. One of the things I'm glad about is that Microsoft's going to say, okay, Tim, do something weird like you always do. And knowing Tim Schafer, it'll involve hot rods, metal, decals, and Jack Black.
I'm perfectly okay with that.
You know, one of the funniest things that Yahtzee Croshaw said, have you ever noticed that you never see Tim Schafer and Jack Black in the same room together? And considering how they both look, you know, so, yeah, there is sort of something funny going on there.
You have to play all the way to the end of Brutal Legend, and then you get to see a quick cut scene of them standing together. Yeah. It's not long though. You gotta work for it.
Yeah, it's Photoshop.
You gotta work for the truth.
You know, I will say that, you know, whatever Undead Labs does, I'm gonna be a hypocrite and say I hope they just make State of Decay 3. State of Decay 2 is addictive, but there are problems with it that I have that I would love to see them just fix and iterate on the stuff there, you know, with a more powerful machine. It's State of Decay 2 is one of those games which is almost perfect, and it could be perfect. I still haven't played co-op yet. I'm going to have to try that sometime. Just go into someone else's world and help them out. And not as a troll, I'll be one of those rare people who go into someone else's world and actually help them out and not wreck. Because that system is just begging for a griefing.
Yeah.
Okay, anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes, leave some iTunes comments, or you can just go to Shaq News and read what TJ's writing there. You know, Shaq News, at some point, you're actually, I don't know how much you can see, writing for Shaq News is sort of like writing for The Verge or writing for these classic PC or, you know, gaming websites that have been around forever, but people just breathe. You know, like Blues News, Shaq News. I mean, if Joystick was still around. See, that's what Shaq News is. It's like Joystick, except Joystick is no longer around. Does anybody miss Joystick?
Do they still have the Joystick Awards now and then, or is that something different?
Nah. I think everybody from Joystick fled, did other stuff. If Joystick were still around, Yahtzee Croshaw would have been doing stuff for it and not Escapist.
Yeah. Well, either way, I'm the same old me. Yes, I am on Shaq News, and you can find my work there. I appreciate when people read my stuff. So
you can also find me at Jonah Falcon on Twitter.
You can find me at Alpha Shark on Twitter.
And I'm at Johnny Chugs.
And we will see you. Well, oh yeah, I forgot to mention, I'm going to be at PAX Unplugged this weekend.
Play all the board games.
Well, I'm actually working with Slugfest Games. For those who don't know, they do Red Dragon Inn. So I'm going to be teaching people for the first few hours of the day to play Red Dragon Inn, and then I'm just going to run and do anything. And since I'm working over 12 hours, I will be an exhibitor, which means I get to go in early, even before the press. Ha ha ha. Yeah, there was a specific game that you wanted me to check out based on a video game.
What's the name of it? Sniper. Sniper something.
Sniper Elite.
Sniper Elite. Sniper Elite, the board game. And tell me how they incorporate exploding nut shots into that game.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be a ton of Kickstarter stuff there, too, including stuff that I backed. So I'll be able to play, you know, stuff like Tiny Epic Zombies and Role Player, the expansion that's coming out. That's definitely going to be there. He told everybody what booth he's going to be in. I'm in on that because I have all the expansions for Role Player. For those who don't know Role Player, and it's spelled R-O-L-L, basically the game is you're rolling your character like an AD&D thing, you know, strength, dexterity, constitution, charisma, blah, 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 with 3d6s, except you're building it very slowly. Everybody has to bid on a dice to put on their board, and you're trying to get certain goals, and you're trying to get weapons and armor and stuff like that and skills. So Role Player now adds fiends and familiars. Familiars you get are basically what it is. You know, you get an animal companion. And before it was just you building a character, And then at some point after the game is over, you think, okay, this guy's going off to fight something. Well, in the next expansion, you started fighting stuff. And now you have even more of that. But here's the thing. You also get traits and alignment. Some of them are really funny because they're completely random. Like a wizard who is a loner and a psychotic. You know, that sort of thing. And the funny thing is when you're building these characters form in your brain as you make them. And it's sort of like, yeah, I like this character. I'm going to do an AD&D character based on him.
I wonder if it doesn't quite look like it, but I wonder if Larian's going to show up at Unplugged with their Divinity Original Sin.
Oh, yeah, they have their board game there, yeah.
Oh, cool. You should check that
Divinity,
out, too.
The Divinity Original Sin board game. There was also a board game that was on thing based on a game. I forgot which one it was, and it was like, oh, if I had the money right now, I would definitely be in on it. It's $200 if you want to do all of it. And I'm the sort of person who's enough of a knobhead who would actually plunk down $200. I'm the one who plunked down $145 for Pillars of Eternity.
Ah, there's 16 days left. I kind of want to throw money at this, but I gotta wait for another paycheck.
Here's the thing: you just put it on your thing, and you might come into money and say, "Oh yeah," and then just immediately just stamp it in. Yeah, I got the $200. Okay, this is what's going towards. I'm also the person who spent $830 on Psychonauts 2, so I still haven't gotten the book bag yet. I've got the other stuff though. I got the badges. I got the plushie. When I went to PAX East, the guys, Tiny Build, gave me an entire swag bag of Tiny Build stuff. So I have. On my door, I have the guy from Hello Neighbor, who sort of prevents the door from opening up too much. You know, he's sort of like a thing. So he's hanging on my mirror right now. Just a reminder, I'm going to kidnap your kids if you don't watch out.
Yeah.
Anyways.
And on that note.
Yeah. So I will give everybody the full PAX Unplugged report next week. And we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.